Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Office of the President of Malta entitled Political Developments in the Tapestry Chamber Since 1921. This talk is delivered by Dr. Alfred Bonici.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, in spite of the timing, the day, the weather up to a certain extent, but you managed to brave the conditions of today. But I think today, not to diminish from the great sacrifice that Dr. Alfred Bonici made for this lecture, but I think that even the unique, not rare, the unique occasion to have the lecture delivered here, I think it's really a unique occasion for this lecture. So this evening, perhaps this subject might be a bit not so romantic, but especially for our historical parliamentary, especially past, I think it's quite important and quite interesting. And the way that Dr. Bonici is going to explain what happened since 1921. I don't know if there is anybody who was born on that day, but in any case, perhaps some facts might reveal some points that never did we ever think about them. So I present to you Dr. Alfred Bonici for the lecture of this evening.
Good evening, friends. I would like to thank Commendatore Salvatore Musub, who, under the distinguished patronage of our president, of our Dr. Abela, president of Malta, was responsible in organizing these lectures, coordinating with Kenneth Muscat from the office of the president. I was invited by Commendatore Musu to give a dissertation about the political events that took place in this chamber, the so-called Tapestry Chamber, that served as a legislative assembly and senate after the granting of the first self-government constitution of 1921, the Amery-Milner Constitution, up to 1976. This chamber served as a parliament up to 1976, when parliament was transferred then to the armory with the following legislature. I thought that I should wear this medal because this medal was given to me by the parliament here. It was given also to others who had served for 15 continuous years, commemorating the 75th anniversary of the 1921 self-government first constitution that we are starting to talk about. So I thought it is quite appropriate to show it off. Obviously, because Mr. Musu has just instructed me not to go over the limit, the maximum of 60 minutes, it's going to be rather very hard to condense what actually happened in this chamber from 1921 to 1976. But I will do my best. Obviously, I will be touching the tip of the iceberg. This chamber, during the time of the Grand Masters, was called the Sala del piccolo consiglio. A lot of people think that this was the only chamber. No, this was only the second chamber, where the Grand Master met a restricted number of counselors. The present-day throne room, the other room, was where actually the Grand Council met and was called Sala del Gran Consiglio. Claire Bonavia, as you know, in December 2011, gave a lecture on these tapestries as part of the series of lectures, giving an extraordinary amount of details about the composition of the tapestries, and it is enough for me to make a very brief reference to them today. A German prince, Johann Maurice of Nassau, during 1636 and 1644, on behalf of the Dutch East Indian Company, went on an expedition to Africa and South America and took with him two artists, one Albert van den Eekhout, who sketched the wild life, as you see, birds and indigenous people, and the other, Franz Post, the landscape. In 1679, Prince Maurice gave these drawings to King Louis XIV of France, who chose 10 drawings and passed them on to his personal painter, Charles Le Brun, who was the director of the Gobelin Tapestry firm in Paris, in order to execute a set for his Versailles Paris, which he did. It was later Grand Master Ramon Perellos who personally ordered, with the permission of France, and paid for these tapestries from Gobelin, and donated them to this chamber. They were woven precisely for this chamber, adapted for this chamber, on being elected Grand Master as part of his gioia. Because at that time, when a Grand Master was elected, he subscribed to something, either a castle or some embellishment in the Church of St. John. Perellos donated a set in St. John's and this set of Gobelin tablets out of his own pocket. They arrived in 1710 and have been hanging here ever since. If only they could speak. What interesting political events they would tell us. As this chamber was the bakery where the constitutional developments of Malta in its various phases was baked. Here, all legislation took place from 1921 onwards. All bills were debated and voted upon in here and became law. During the British period, it was used for sittings of the Legislative Assembly, Senate, and Council of Government. Then, after independence of 1964, as our Parliament. Although the Malta Speaker had a set of standing orders to go by, proceedings in this chamber were more or less on the lines of the Westminster pattern, which functioned on precedent. In England, there was no laws, no nothing, no standing orders. They just functioned on what happened before, helped by the publication Parliamentary Practice by Erskine May, who also became the refuge of all Maltese speakers. Before 1921, from 1813 onwards, Malta was granted different constitutions in 1835, 1849, which did not come up to the expectations of the Maltese. After the riots of June 1919, the 1921 Amery-Milner self-government constitution was inaugurated on the 1st November 1921 by the Prince of Wales, Prince Edward. This was the first self-government constitution that gave for the first time the right to the Malta government to legislate and administer on local matters. To commemorate this event, it was decided that a new definitive set of postage stamps was to be issued. I must mention this. As a result of a competition announced on the 17th June 1921, the design suggested by Edward Caruana Dingley was adopted for the farthing to sixpence and £1 values, and a design by G. Vella for the shilling to 10 shilling values was accepted. In the meantime, while this printing was being ordered, was being carried out, the current local definitive postage stamp was overprinted self-government. By section 41 of the Malta Constitution letters patent, the Maltese legislature was given the power to make laws and titled acts for the peace, order and good government of Malta, subject to the limitation that such powers was not to extend to matters referred to as reserved matters. There were matters which the Malta government had no say in, which we will be talking about, touching the public safety and defense of the empire and the general interests of British subjects not resident in Malta, and not to exceed to the control or discipline of the naval, military or air forces of the Crown, the defense of the island, the compulsory acquisition subject to the payment of reasonable compensation of land and buildings for naval or military purposes, the control of aerial navigation, surveys for naval, military and defense purposes, submarine cables, telegraphy, the palaces, including this one, and other buildings, then in official occupation of the governor. Trade with any place outside the island, this was also a reserved matter, except so far as trade that could be, that legislation would pass by way of taxation. Coinage and currency, immigration, naturalization and aliens, postal and telegraphic censorship, the issue and visa of passports, treaties or any relations with any state. This meant that no foreign affairs could be carried out. This chamber saw the heated debates that took place about the language problem, and it was the 1921 Constitution that established that the official language and that of the administration was English, and that of the law courts Italian. There were two chambers, the Legislative Assembly with 32 member seats, elected from 8 districts, Gozo being the 8th, each division returning 4 members on the proportional representation single transferable vote, elected for a period of 3 years. They had to be, there were conditions, they had to be male British subjects of the age of 21 years or upwards, were able to read and write, or who were, in their own right or in the right of their wives, in receipt from immovable property in Malta or from other capital of a clear income of not less than £5, per annum or paid annually rents to that amount. The qualifications for voters were the same. To be able to vote, you had to abide by those restrictions. Two, the Senate. The Senate was a corporate one, consisting of 10 special members, representative of certain classes or bodies, the clergy, the nobility, the university graduates, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Trade Union Council, and 7 general members elected on a limited franchise and possessing certain specific qualifications. Both the special and the general members were to be male British subjects of the age, this is for the Senate, of 35 years or over. Every Senate, unless dissolved earlier, continued for 6 years from the first meeting, of which a president and vice president were elected from among the members. All questions in either house were determined by a majority of the votes of the members present. Other than the president, speaker, or presiding member, who in the event of an equality of votes had a casting vote. Provision was also made in the letters patent of the ministry. Ministers were to be 7, including the head of the ministry. The executive council, consisting of such persons being ministers as the governor might appointed by the governor. The nominated council, consisting of the lieutenant governor and the legal advisor, sitting as ex officio members, and of one officer from each of the 3 services appointed by the king or the governor. The Privy Council, consisting of the Executive Council and the Nominated Council sitting together. And there was the Joint Committee of the Privy Council, consisting of 3 members of the Executive Council chosen by the head of the ministry, and 3 members of the Nominated Council chosen by the governor. All debates on discussions here could only be conducted in English, Italian, or Maltese language, and every speech delivered in either house was printed in the house journals and proceedings of the house in the language it was delivered, except that a speech delivered in Maltese might be printed either in English or in Italian at the option of the member who delivered it. Bills and laws were printed in English and Italian, and the 2 texts were of equal force and validity. On the 25th January 1926, a compact agreement was signed between the Constitutional Party of Lord Strickland and the Labour Party under Colonel William Savona, which eventually, after the election of 1927, the compact agreement gave a majority to the Constitutional Party, and Lord Strickland became Prime Minister. In spite of this agreement, the Labour Party did not accept any ministerial posts. For the 1927 election, this chamber saw the union of the Unione Politica Maltese, headed by Francesco Bohagiar, and the Nationalist Party, Democratic Nationalist Party, under Enrico Mizzi. On the 8th April 1929, this is interesting, Dr. Carmelo Mifsud Bonnici, Il Gross, was sent to prison for 3 days by Speaker Robbie Hamilton from this chair on a motion submitted by Prime Minister Gerald Strickland. He was accused that he had insulted the Legislative Assembly in his editorial article of the 16th May 1929 in the Midday News newspaper. He remained in prison for 2 days, and when he emerged, He was greeted by a very big crowd of Cotonera supporters who took him home shoulder high. There were other breaches of privilege. For example, the editor of the Ass newspaper committed to jail for a few days, and others. This constitution worked with comparatively smoothness until the political crisis of 1928-30. The crisis started with the case of the trade union senators, gathered momentum with the dispute over the powers of the Senate, and culminated in a grave dispute between church and state, with episcopal bans being issued against Lord Strickland and his party. This constitution was suspended. On the recommendation of the Royal Commission of 1933, certain amendments were made by the Malta Constitution, letter patent of the April 1932, to the provisions of the 1921 Constitution relating to language and responsible government was restored, but included more reserved matters. The appointment, remuneration, tenure of office, and removal of judges, who henceforth were to be appointed and could be removed by the governor, the police. Shortly after this, on the 2nd November 1933, the Constitution was again suspended, with a dissolution of the legislature and the withdrawal of the ministers' warrants, both as ministers and as members of the Executive Council. The result was legislation by ordinance. During this period, the Malta Constitution letter patent of the 16th August 1934 was passed, making Maltese the official language of the courts now, no longer Italian, official language of the courts, and raising the number of the official languages of Malta to three by the addition to an English, Italian, of the Maltese language. Following this, we saw the Act of the United Kingdom Parliament, the Malta Act 1936, pass in the UK, vesting His Majesty with full powers to revoke or amend by further letter patents all the provisions of the 1921 Constitution. The period between 1928 and 1936 was a period of political confusion and much legal ingenuity. Some of the ultra vires cases when then fought remained famous up till today. Hardly any enactment passed in this chamber that was not challenged. The 1921 Constitution came to an end. The 1936 Constitution was a temporary one, which was followed on 28 July 1939 by the MacDonald Constitution, where the Council of Government was established for 4 years now, composed of 20 members, 5 ex officio, and 3 official members and 2 unofficial members to be appointed by the governor and 10 elected by the people, the governor presiding. Malta and Gozo were divided in 2 districts, 2 constituencies, from where 5 members could be elected from each. Because of the war, and how the war came about, because of the war, these tapestries were removed for safekeeping. But the Council of Government continued to function from here. On the 30th May 1940, Dr. Nerik Mitzi, who was an elected member in this chamber, was arrested and interned in Fort Salvatore in Cospicua, Bormla, together with 50 other Maltese, and afterwards in 1942 transferred to St. Agata in Rabat. On the 31st of January 1942, the internees in St. Agatha received a deportation order, deportation notice. And they questioned this in our local court, as they maintained that the governor had no right to deport British subjects from Malta without a trial. This lawsuit was brought before the local courts, presided by Judge A.J. Montanaro Gauci on the 3rd February with urgency, who on the 8th February pronounced his ruling in favor of the detainees. It was illegal. Notwithstanding this, seeing that the courts had passed a ruling against what the governor wanted, the governor, in this chamber, on the 9th February, proposed a motion to the Council of Government to annul this decision of our courts, of Montanaro Gauci. Sir Ugo Mifsud, a nationalist member, on the 9th February protested in this chamber very strongly against this motion, which now the governor wanted this chamber to pass, which he considered as an illegal deportation without trial, and while protesting in a very forceful, brilliant manner in this chamber, collapsed. He suffered a heart attack. A myocardial infarct was taken home. He died 2 days later, on the 11th February, in his Lia residence. The debate, of course, continued. And these tapestries witnessed some terrible speeches, which are recorded in the House Journal. Dr. Borcholever remained alone. He became the only nationalist member in this chamber, voting alone against this motion by the governor of deportation. It passed. Subsequently, Dr. Nerik Mitzi, the Chief Justice, Sir Arturo Mercia, accompanied by his daughter, she voluntarily wanted to accompany her father, Monsignor Pantallarescu, Dr. Herbert Ganado, and about 45 other Maltese were placed in the hold of the ship Breckenshire, and taken to Egypt. And then to Uganda, from Egypt to Uganda, where they remained until the war ended. The seat of Dr. Nerik Mitzi in this chamber, although he was exiled, remained unoccupied during the duration of the war. On the 10th February 1944, now we are beginning to come to the post-war era, a national congress was formed, which eventually conveyed a national assembly in January of 1945 under the chairmanship of Professor Contino Sir Luigi Preziosi. And an election for the Council of Government was held in 1945. An important amendment for this election was the vote being extended to all males of 21 years and over. Only the Labour Party and Jones Party for Gozo took part. And this chamber saw only these two parties being returned, because they were the only taking part, as the other parties wanted first the grant of self-government, which was being promised post-war. They wanted first to have the new self-government constitution, a draft of which was being prepared by Contino Sir Luigi Preziosi, and on the 17th July 1946 he presented it to Sir Harold MacMichael, which was granted, and so the Constitution was granted on the 5th September 1947. The Nationalist Party, while accepting this Constitution, was insisting on the dominion status idea. This 1947 Constitution, known as the Allura MacMichael Constitution, closely followed the pattern of that of 1921. The most notable differences were no longer a bicameral, this chamber was no longer bicameral, an assembly and a senate. It consisted only of a legislative assembly, the senate being eliminated. It consisted now of 40 members who were elected from 8 constituencies of 5 members each, on the single transferable proportional representation system. Its life now was 4 years, the longest so far, 4 years, plus universal suffrage vote extended for the first time to women, and they could stand also for election. This was the 1947 Constitution, which gave our women the right to vote and the right to stand for election. The maximum number of ministers was raised to 8. Italian was eliminated. The English language and the Maltese language became the official languages of Malta. All debates in this chamber were to be conducted in English or Maltese language. Bills and laws were to be printed in both the English and the Maltese language, the English version to prevail in case of conflict. Every speech delivered in this chamber and every notice of motion or of a question in this chamber and every reply to any such questions, if printed or published in the House journals, our Hansard, in England it is called the Hansard, this House Journal of the House of Commons, it is called Hansard. And in Malta we also use it sometimes as our Hansard, was to be printed in the language it was delivered. The 1947 election was won by the Labour Party under Dr. Paul Boffa with 24 seats, the opposition being Nationalist Party that had just come out with its leaders interned, just emerging at that time. It was very dangerous to call yourself a nationalist. Nationalist Party, 7 seats. Democratic Action Party, 4 seats. Gozo Party, Gozo had its own party, 3 seats. And Jones Party, 2 seats. Gozo had 2 parties, the Gozo Party and Jones. So they, between them, had the maximum of seats, 3-2 out of the 5. The government, I must say this also, the government this time issued another set of stamps, overprinted self-government, but stating 1947. The 1921 issue was just self-government. Now it was printed self-government 1947. On the current King George VI definitive stamps to commemorate this event. It saw the 1947 election. It saw the return of Dr. Enrico Mizzi as leader of the Nationalist Party, taking his seat again after his internment in Uganda. This parliament was inaugurated by the Duke of Gloucester on the 11th November 47, and Miss Agatha Barbara became the first woman to serve in this chamber. She was appointed Minister of Education in the 1955 Labour government by Don Mintoff, and later, as you know, she became also president. In the speech from the throne of 1947, among other things, it was declared that technical education was to be implemented. Up till that time, there was no technical institute, no technical education. The introduction of income tax. There was no income tax at that time. And the contributory national insurance scheme. And that St. Luke's Hospital, which had started being built pre-war, to be completed. During this legislature, this chamber saw the split of the Labour Party under Dr. Paul Boffa in 1944 and Mr. Domintov elected as leader. Fresh elections were held in 1950 and this chamber saw Dr. Nerik Mizzi, now Prime Minister, from exile, the Al-Qaeda of Malta, Prime Minister. Dr. Nerik Mizzi, Prime Minister, forming a minority government. The Nationalist Party has a minority of seats. And after his death, which occurred soon afterwards, on the 20th December 1950, this chamber saw now Dr. George Borcholivir, Prime Minister, for the first time, also heading a minority government, which was defeated in 1951 and the sword. The 1951 election, which followed, was a coalition government now between the Nationalist Party under Dr. George Borcholivir and the Workers' Party under Dr. Paul Boffa. This was the first coalition government. First we had a minority, now a coalition with the Labour Party of Boffa. On the 11th May 1953, Borcholivir made a very strong patriotic speech in this chamber. He announced that he was not going for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II and that he was proposing the cancellation of all celebrations in Malta because negotiations about the humiliating conditions the British government wanted to impose on Malta had now regrettably failed, and had come to an end. The Malta government at that time was preparing big celebrations for Queen Elizabeth II. Coronation, and preparations were well underway with full participation of all Malta band clubs. He could not accept the humiliating demands of the colonial office. The motion was carried unanimously and all preparations were cancelled. This became commonly known as the Malta 1953 coronation incident. What was it all about? Borcholivir wanted that Malta should be given the privileges at the coronation celebrations in London, not less than South Rhodesia and Northern Ireland, and not be placed, as the colonial office wanted, with colonies such as Fiji, Papua New Guinea, the West Indies, Trinidad and Tobago, Bermuda, and other similar colonial islands. To understand this, you have to understand the background. That in this particular period, Borcholivir was having very strong negotiations with the colonial office for Malta to be transferred from the colonial office to the Dominion office. So, in spite of these negotiations, for the colonial office to impose this, that he is going to be pushed with all these other minor colonies that Borcholivir could not take. Two, and this is serious, this is, in my opinion, that hurt the ego of Borcholivir. This hurted every Maltese. The Malta flag should not, he demanded, that the Malta flag should be the red and white with the George Cross, and not the one that the colonial office wanted to impose, which was the imperial one, which was a blue flag with a circle in the middle of the Malta coat of arms, the red and white. This is what they wanted to be the official flag of Malta in the coronation. Incidentally, this imperial flag was imposed on the contingent, the Malta contingent, of the Olympic Games in the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin. The Malta team had this imperial flag in front of it. The Queen, after being informed with this Malta decision, informed the British Prime Minister, Mr. Winston Churchill, that she wished Malta to attend. She told him, "I wish Malta to attend." And Mr. Winston Churchill, very late at night, rang personally Dr. Borchardt-Leville, saying, "Mr. Prime Minister, the Queen wishes you to attend." Borchardt-Leville immediately said, "Under what conditions?" The reply was, "Under all the conditions that you demand." Dr. Borchardt-Leville said that he wanted, one, to be with the Dominion group. Two, that the Malta flag to be our traditional one, the red and white with the George Cross. This was immediately agreed upon. And next day, Dr. Borchardt-Leville came in this chamber to announce this change of events and how happy he was that this agreement now has been reached and Malta proceeded with the preparations and the coronation celebrations were held in full strength. However, as now Dr. Borchardt-Leville, being placed with the other dominions, was entitled to be in the procession, coronation procession, in a carriage drawn by two horses, followed by four mounted outriders, as the other dominions now had taken all the carriages, a problem arose that there were no carriages and no horses available for Borchardt-Leville. And Churchill came back to them and said, "Mr. Prime Minister, we have this problem." Borchardt-Leville said, "Sorry, that is your problem, you solve it. I cannot solve it from Malta." Fortunately, the Queen intervened for the second time. Churchill rang Borchardt-Leville again, informing him that the problem had been solved, as the Queen had given him one of her carriages and her horses. Before concluding, Borchardt-Leville requested from Churchill another thing, that two of the four outriders would be Maltese policemen. He wanted the two out of the four to be Maltese, and it was granted. And George Borchardt-Leville attended the coronation of June 1953, accompanied by two Malta policemen on horseback, in the carriage and with the dominion. Borchardt-Leville George showed me personally, very proudly, the official photo that was taken with the Queen and only the dominion leaders. This was published. It is published in, I think, this photo is published in the book about Borchio-Levir, which Henry Frendo published, but he showed it to me personally, and he was very proud of this. He said, at least, for the first time, we have emerged out of the colonial sphere. That the colonial office, now the prime minister, has acknowledged, are beginning to acknowledge that we are European, that we are not like Samoa, British Guiana, the West Indies, that our heritage was much earlier, and that this was going to be the road for further improvement, constitutional improvement. So, this government now was defeated. We are still on the coalition government with Boffa, in 1953, and for the second consecutive time, a coalition government was again formed between the National Party under the Borchio-Levir and the Workers' Party under Boffa, which was again defeated in 1955. When you have a coalition government of this sort, it's always a weak government, and as soon as one of the members wants something and you disagree with, and he votes against you, and you are defeated. 1955, so the Labour, now we are coming now to 1955. So the Labour government under Dom Mintoff be returned to power under the ticket of integration. And this chamber saw heated debates from both sides, the Nationalist Party and the Labour Party. The Nationalist Party, of course, stuck to its idea of dominion status, while now Mintoff comes out with this idea that he wants Malta to be integrated with the UK, sending three members from Malta to the House of Commons, etc., which the Nationalist Party could clearly see that this was not going to work. This was going to be another Northern Ireland. In fact, the honeymoon with the colonial office did not last very long, although England had spent tremendous amount of money, giving Mintoff money so that he could do this, do that, propaganda, roundtable conference here. It flattered the British government that when all the other colonies were wanting independence, when you had Mau Mau in Kenya, killing the British. You had Makarios in Cyprus, Eoka. You had a colony that instead of wanting independence, it wanted integration, it wanted to marry you. So this flattered the British government no end. But again, this did not last very long. In 1957, just 2 years after, Dom Mintoff relation with the UK became sour, and now demanded independence, so from integration. Suddenly we want independence. He presented this chamber on 30 December 1957 with a motion called Break with Britain Resolution. The Nationalist opposition, realizing that Dom Mintoff idea of integration was not materializing, voted with this motion. At that time, the main stumbling block with the British colonial office was over, in my opinion, two things. One, finance, and a very important issue which suddenly emerged was that the British government now wanted to divide the dockyard, which was its responsibility for all those hundreds of years, employing over 30,000 head at that time, under the Admiralty, and under the Admiralty was whether it made a profit or loss, it did not materialize, because it was the British Exchequer which was paying the Admiralty, now wanted suddenly to divide the Admiralty. Half keep it as Admiralty, and the other half as a private firm. And this, of course, was the straw that broke the camel's back with Minto. Of course, the National Party agreed, could not agree with this British attitude, so they voted also with break with Britain resolution, as now both parties now want independence. After Don Mintoff resigns, so Don Mintoff resigns in 1958, with the result that what the British had were negotiating with him to divide the dry docks, suddenly not having a government, his government to deal with, and this is the way that I personally always criticized Mintoff in this house. I said, you should have remained there, and you should have opposed the British government from a government standpoint, not having anybody to negotiate with, because he resigned. They divided the dry docks overnight, giving it, half of it, to Bailey. And this is what started now the rot in the dry docks, the famous Bailey. We'll talk about that later. When Don Mintoff resigned now in 1958, the governor sent for Borchow Division. And he told him, do a government, form a government. He said, how can I form a government when I am in a minority? I don't accept what the British government is proposing. Thank you very much. And he did not accept a government. So a council of administration was set up, with the governor as a head, and we had from 1955 to 1962, from 1958 to 1962, a council of administration. Under this council of administration, several things happened. There was a certain Mr. Stephens who was in charge of what was supposed to be tourism, who was instrumental in passing the whole of Comino, the whole of Comino, to a certain Mr. Gall, who was convicted as a slave trafficker in London for £100 a year. Among others. So, we knew all this. And we were talking about this in our meetings, etc. Now, it is between 1958 and 1962, Malta had another religious crisis, with the Labour Party in 1960 suffering ecclesiastical sanctions. We come to the 1962 Constitution. The 1961 Constitution, because it started in 1961, based on the Blood Commission recommendations and referred to as the Blood Constitution, was presented. All political parties were critical of this Constitution, and some rejected it outright. Eventually, however, all parties contested the first election, which took place in 1962. Five parties contested this election. The Nationalist Party, headed by Borch Olivier, the Democratic Nationalist Party, headed by Dr. Ganado, the Malta Labour Party, the Malta Workers, Catholic Party, the Progressive Constitutional Party, Christian Democrat Party, headed by George Rensley. So far, I have been narrating events from research. But from now on, from 1962 on, I will be telling you my experience in this chamber. I was elected the first time in this legislature in 1962. And being the youngest member in this chamber on the side of the government, I had the privilege to address this chamber in what was called the reply to the throne, to the speech from the throne. I concentrated on the dry dock, Bailey, and Malta's aspiration to the European community, because this idea of the European community had emerged the first time in the Nationalist Party electoral program of 1962, where it was stated that if the Nationalist Party won the election, they would explore at that stage the possibility of Malta joining the European community. At the time it was called the European community. England was not yet. There were only the five, etc. So it was just an exploration. But it was already in the head of Bolcho-Levir and my party that was the road now for Malta. And so I was present here for all the debates that led to the birth of independence on the 21st September 1964. I was part of it. I was nominated speaker and served from 1966 and 71 on this chair from up here. And so signed all the infrastructure bills presented here. And when in 1971 the Nationalist Party lost the election, I was elected and so formed part of the opposition. So I began from there, center, there, out of the door. 15 years. Between 1962 and 64, this chamber witnessed very heated debates on independence, as you can imagine. The 1962 election took place, and the Nationalist Party obtained 25 seats against a combined opposition of 25 seats. The legislature was 50. Government, 25 seats. Mintoff, 16 seats. Pellegrini, an offshoot of the Labour Party, 4 seats. Ganado, an offshoot of the Nationalist Party, 4 seats. Mabel Strickland, 1 seat. What happened was that one of Ganado's members, a certain Coronata Tard, disagreed with Ganado's non-independence idea. Ganado did not want independence at that time. He wanted it later. He disagreed, and from there he crossed over to us. So now we become suddenly 26-24. When the results were published, and the majority now was with the governor, with Bolcho-Levir, with the nationalists, the governor invited, as is usual, Dr. Bolcho-Levir to form a government. But he made certain reservations, among which the provisions of the Constitution concerning the accessibility of cabinet papers, because in this blood Constitution there was the proviso that all cabinet papers had to be sent to the governor, and that the High Commissioner had the right to receive the agenda of the cabinet. He could not accept this. The Public Service Commission was taken out of the jurisdiction of the Malta government. He could not accept this. Responsibility of the police, again, was taken out. So he sought immediate discussions with the Secretary of State, Mr. Reginald Maudling, in London. It was after receiving assurances that the Secretary of State was ready to discuss these constitutional matters with him at an early date that he accepted to form a government. These talks were held in March-April 1962, with Dr. Borcho Levier not returning to Malta, who was there for about a month and a half in London, returning to Malta before all his demands were fully met. So, no cabinet papers to the governor, no agenda to the High Commissioner, the police back to the government, the other items back to the Malta government. So he formed his cabinet, became prime minister, and summoned parliament under these new amended conditions. You see, this is the beauty of Borcho Levier, that he had all these problems with the British government, but always steadfast, very polite. He knew what he wanted, and he would not budge an inch before what he wanted was granted. We see it repeated, repeated, repeated all over again. This was diametrically opposed with the character of Mr. Mitov, unfortunately, who flared at the slightest provocation. Soon after, he settled now these constitutional items, and this is where we are now coming to the nitty-gritty. Soon after, he started negotiations with the British government on financial assistance, because unfortunately at that time, every government had this problem, that every year, when it came to the budget, the balance, we always went to London to request the British government to help us with the financing of the budget, to balance the budget with the British government, and he asked for 1.8 million as a grant, besides the other loans, etc. After long and very heated discussions, Duncan Sands on the 17th of August offered only 100,000. I did not make a mistake, 100,000. Borcho Levier told the Secretary of State that if he accepted this humiliating offer, he would be the laughing stock of the Maltese. He was not a church sexton and did not come to London to make a silver collection. On the 28th August 1962, the Prime Minister wrote to the Secretary of State when everything failed, Mr. Duncan Sands, formally demanding independence, and asked him to fix, as a matter of urgency, a date for the Maltese Islands' independence within the Commonwealth. Preparatory talks were started in December 1962 for the holding of an independence conference in London, at which all parties in this chamber were invited. There was the Labour Party, Ganado, Pellegrini, and Mabel. Professor Cremona was entrusted by the government to draft the new independence constitution, which became known as the Maltese Draft, discussed in cabinet and passed to the political parties in this chamber. During this time, the opposition, I have already said this, were composed, as I told you. This draft formed the basis for discussion at the Malta Independence Conference, which was held at Marlborough House in London in July 1963. It was at this conference that the Malta Labour Party wanted to introduce certain religious issues, which in Malta became known as the 6 points of Mitov, to which the church strongly objected. Archbishop Gonzi spoke strongly several times against them and declared publicly that he was prepared to go to prison. There were other issues besides these religious issues, such as the monarchy. Litov never wanted the monarchy, he wanted the republic straight away, and there were other issues. But these, otherwise I'll keep you here until kingdom come. Against this background, now, Bolcho-Levir, therefore, excluded, seeing that the church was so much against these six, which were anti-church, these 6 points from the Constitution when he presented it in this chamber for a vote. Because now, Bolcho-Levir does his own Constitution, excluding most of what Litov wanted, and brought it to this chamber for a vote, which passed. He did not stop there. He said, I must now have the approval of the country. And he went for a referendum. And the referendum question was, do you accept, do you approve of the independence constitution as approved by Parliament, as I presented it, with all the exclusion clauses that Litov wanted? I still am going to have the Queen. No religious anti-clauses in there, etc., etc. So he had. And this is very important to remember, because I will be referring to this later. It is very important that the independence constitution, although passed in this Parliament, he went to the people, to have the endorsement of the people. The result of the referendum held between the 2nd and 4th May 1962 was in favor of the proposed constitution, and the Independence Act of 1964 was passed. Now, once it passed through Malta, the United Kingdom Parliament, receiving the royal assent on the 31st July 1964, and Malta became independent on 21st September 1964. July, August, hardly 2.5 months later. This is a simple manner how I am telling you the way up till this stage now, because God knows through what wrangle and what terrible fears Bolcho-Levir passed when he had all the political parties against him, when he had half of the House of Commons, which was Protestant against him, etc., etc., etc. But finally it passed, plus the British government was on the verge of going for an election, so it could have gone all in smoke suddenly. I always call it the third miracle of St. Paul with Malta. It is important to point out that tied to the independence agreement, because this is not often said, this is, most people forget this, to the independence, there was a defense and financial agreement tied to it. Bolcho-Levir did not want the British, with all their troops, with all their army, navy, and air force, to go away suddenly from Sunday to Monday and be landed with all that unemployment, plus the financial assistance. We had nothing in 1962, when I tell you, nothing, nothing, only one hotel, the Phoenicia, with a clause that no other hotel can be built in Malta. That is what Bolcho-Levir found. Unemployment sky high, emigration sky high. So he tied the independence agreement very cleverly to a finance and financial agreement. Plus, his idea of keeping the Queen in Malta, making her the Queen of Malta, was precisely because at that time we wanted to attract all the people, all the English people who were going out of East Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Tanganyika. We wanted them to come and settle here. We wanted to start. And Bolcho-Levir wanted to show that this was not a question of a fight with the British people, This was a fight with the colonial administration. The British people were welcome and very welcome to come to Malta. And that is why he kept the pre-colonial governor as the post-colonial governor, Sir Doris Lorman, plus made the Queen as the Queen of Malta. And that is why we had a lot of settlers come here, and that is why we started our economy moving, because to build a house, one house, you have to employ masons, you have to employ whitewashers, you have to employ electricians, you have to... So all this employment suddenly started, and that is what started our road after independence. With the constitution, Parliament was consisting of 50 seats now, elected 5 from each of 10 electoral districts for 5 years, with Queen Elizabeth II now the Queen of Malta, and the Governor General representing her, the same Governor General we had before. In November 67, she inaugurated, in 1967, now 3 years later, she inaugurated the opening of Parliament when I was Speaker. And she began her speech with the words, "I come to you as the Queen of Malta." I come to you as the Queen of Malta. I was nominated Speaker in April of 1966. And therefore, from this seat, on this platform, like the hanging tapestries, I was able to observe from very close distance the two protagonists in this chamber. Don Mintoff as leader of the opposition, George Bortolivier, leader of the government. I was able to appreciate their intelligence, foresight, the different political methods of these two political giants that this chamber had the privilege to witness. Both with their different methods, both wanted Malta to become an independent state and worked hard with their different approaches to achieve this. I remember when in 1962, Minister Giovanni Felice was addressing this chamber from a seat of Verder in reply to the speech from the throne, where it was stated, "My ministers will be actively exploring the possibility of Malta participating in the common market." Mintoff stood up and said, "We agree, but in order to achieve this, Malta must be independent." So in 1962, both had this vision. This was the constitutional vision of these two people in here. I could see from close quarters how Bortolivier and Mintoff fitted perfectly in the political environment of the time. What was missing in one was found in the other, and vice versa. By looking at each other, they reached a silent agreement. Notwithstanding that their methods were different, many times they used this basic difference to their advantage to achieve their aims, especially in negotiating with the British government. They had great respect towards each other. This chamber, in 1962, discussed the Rocco Abdullah case, who on the opening of this legislature was serving a prison sentence for slandering the Archbishop. Mr. Mintoff one day objected to the reports as published in the House Journal as being cooked, and immediately I gave him permission to investigate by any means he wanted the official records, and instructed the clerk, Mr. Turtel, to cooperate fully. Next day, at the beginning of the sitting, Mr. Minto stood up and apologized, saying that the debates were not cooked, but a genuine mistake was committed by one of the stenographers. I do not believe that Minto apologized to anybody else in his whole career. In my time as speaker, it was the custom that when a bill reached the third reading, the end, the speaker had to say only, those in favor, those against, those in favor have it. The bill carried. When this House was debating the bill on the increase from 50 to 55 seats with a revision of the boundaries before the 1971 election, the opposition opposed this bill very strongly, resorting to all imaginable delaying tactics. And when we reached the third reading and just asked for this, those in favor and those against the yes have it, the bill passed, I had a gut feeling that the opposition were going to challenge the legality of this bill in our courts. And if I was asked in court, how did you arrive at the conclusion that when you called the vote, the yes had a majority? So when reaching that stage, after calling the yes vote, I made those in favor stand up and be counted. This was the first time that this procedure was used in this chamber, which was adopted by speakers of the House after me. When I pronounced that the bill was carried, pandemonium broke loose, and I adjourned the sitting. My premonition was correct. The opposition did go to court in the first instance, and they lost. They went to the Court of Appeal and also lost. In this legislature, the chamber saw Malta present in the Council of Europe, the United Nations and its agencies and other international agencies. When for the first time, foreign affairs was the responsibility of the Malta government. The Foreign Affairs Department was set up, and so diplomatic relations on ambassadorial or high commission level were established for the first time. There were important bills for the infrastructure of Malta, like the bill to establish the Development Corporation, the Central Bank Act, bill to enable Malta to become member of the International Monetary Fund, the Bank Act, the Malta Armed Forces Act, and others, which I personally signed, and others. In February of 67, the British government, now this was a very severe situation, in February of 1967, the British government, and now suddenly, contrary to the Clause 6 of the Defence Agreement of 1961, they took a unilateral decision to implement a severe rundown of its forces in Malta. And this chamber witnessed very dramatic, strong debates on this issue. The General Workers' Union, under Mr. Attard Kingswell, accompanied Dr. Borcholiver to London for talks. The Governor, Sir Doris Dorman, came out very strongly against this rundown and pronounced himself as being for square with the Maltese people. The rundown was amended to the satisfaction of all concerned. In 1969, Eddie Finucane was co-opted. This was the first time that Eddie made a presence in this chamber. He was co-opted after one of the nationalist members, Mr. Caruana, had died, and there was nobody in that constituency because he had been elected on a by-election to replace him. And of course, later he became Prime Minister and also President. In 1967, I, as Speaker, had the privilege to welcome Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip when they inaugurated a new session of Parliament. I lasted as Speaker up to 1971, a full five-year term. In 1971, Mr. Domintoff became Prime Minister. I was elected and was on the opposition benches up to 1976. As soon as he came to power, Mr. Mintoff started negotiations with the British government to revise the financial agreement and defense agreement, which he wanted extended to April 1969. This agreement had been originally signed by Bolsover on independence in 64. And in this tapestry chamber, he made various statements to this effect. Air Malta was set up in this legislature. Republic constitutional debates took place here now. Negotiations on the constitution, the Republic constitution, on party level began through Sir Anthony Mamo. And a lot of good amendments were made to the original draft. The Nationalist Party, we were divided on this issue. Dr. Bolsover believed and insisted that as he had held a referendum about the independence constitution of 1964, a similar referendum should be held to approve or otherwise the present Republic Bill as it was being proposed, which now included major changes. There was the question of the monarchy, which was. He felt he would be betraying the people who voted yes in the referendum for his independence constitution, if now, behind their backs, he would be voting for a constitution which included major changes without a referendum. He insisted on a referendum. He used to tell me, how can I walk in the street if I vote with Mintoff today because he's threatening, because he's doing this and he's doing that? How can I face those people who voted for my constitution, my independence constitution, when I had left all these things out? Let him do a referendum. If the people want it, fair enough, but not without their consent. I personally think that Mintoff did not want a referendum because he thought that a referendum result was always not a sure vote. Two, among the Labour supporters, he feared that there was a section that was in favour of the monarchy, which he was now removing. And most of all, he feared that as he now had introduced the corrupt practice clause, the church would involve itself against him again. So he doesn't want a referendum. If he could get two-thirds without a problem from my colleagues. When Dr. Bolsover saw that most of our colleagues did not want to abide with his directive, he gave us a free vote and told us that we were all free to vote according to our conscience. So this chamber saw Dr. Bolsover, Dr. Paul Bolsover, his brother, Dr. Albert Bolsover de Puget, his nephew, Dr. Alexander Kakia Zamit, Dr. Joe Casargalia, and myself, Alfred Bonnici, vote against the bill. However, afterwards we all took the oath of loyalty towards the Republic, Dr. Bolsover adding, save that it is constitutionally correct. And we became a Republic. On the 30th January 1974, Alfred Baldacchino left the Nationalist opposition and crossed over to Labour. You see, crossing in this chamber was not a recent innovation, you know. Some of the bills that passed during this legislature was the introduction of decimal currency, break with sterling, abolition of the death penalty, abolition of the Privy Council, as the first court of appeal. With the Republic Constitution, the post of Governor General became the President of the Republic of Malta, with the first one being Sir Anthony Mamo. This legislature lasted up to 1976, when the last sitting was held before being transferred to where the Armory was and is still there as of today. Soon, it will be transferred to the Piano Parliament building. It is not my remit today to speak on the proceedings in the new Parliament from 1976 to today, in which, as you know, very important constitutional developments took place. Thank you very much. Sitting in this chair, on this chair, I feel that I have come back home. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Alfred Bollici. I presume, as I myself, although I have read also a lot about these, but this evening it's been quite pleasurable to listen to it, personal and direct experience of Dr. Bollici. Before starting, he said, but Salvatore, do you think this will appeal to the public? Of course, it did appeal. Thank you very much.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Office of the President of Malta entitled Political Developments and the Tapestry Chamber since 1921. This talk was delivered by Dr. Alfred Bollici.